Well, I think what everybody is most concerned about, Joe, is just the changes we've been through in the last several years and trying to sort out some of the problems that we've had in the assessment. So this year we're able to do that, but the net result of it was about a 30% drop in the estimate of how many fish were out there. Hasn't changed how many fish are on the grounds. It's changed our estimate of it, and that's been a tough thing for folks to wrap their heads around.
You've probably heard from Southeast Alaska fleet members about the cuts they've observed over the past decade. And comparing that to what other areas have seen or not seen during that time, what's the rationale for how the areas absorb different cuts or take different cuts, or whether the commission goes with staff recommendations and science and that kind of thing for the different areas?
Yeah, this is kind of an evolving process right now. The staff changed, at the request of the commissioners, the staff changed the way it provided advice this year. But to get to the first part of your question, it's true that 2C and Area 2 in general has gone through some pretty severe cuts in the last little while. Probably not as much in BC, partly because of commission decisions. But I do think we're seeing some of the benefits of that. We're starting to see improvements in Area 2C, actually all of Area 2 right now. But at the request of the commission this year, the staff provided a different framework for its advice. We provided a very large table that just essentially looked at what are the benefits for particular yield levels and what are the potential risks of taking some of those choices. And the commissioners did make their decision on the base of that table, on the basis of that table, but it didn't necessarily translate into the same sort of net result everywhere. For example, in 2C, where there was an expectation of a higher catch limit for this area, that was realized according to what the previous harvest policy would have been. The other areas didn't actually match what the harvest policy was, so they came down from where they were last year, but they didn't align with what the harvest policy might have been had the commissioners taken the same consistent approach everywhere.
And that just comes down to a political decision at the commission level.
It does, yeah. It's something that they have the authority and the responsibility to make those decisions, and so it's a different framework for how we've operated in the past, and it's been, to be honest, it's been an evolutionary process for the staff as well as for the commission.
As staff, what do you think of the new system of the recommendations, as you were talking about, the blue line approach, which always makes me think of a hockey game? what do you think of how that went in the first year? Did it help things? Did it confuse things in getting that word out to the public of the possibilities? And
I think it was somewhat confusing. I think we all hoped that what would come out of this was a clear articulation of just exactly why choices might have been made for particular reasons. And that was the case in some instances, but not necessarily all. I think the staff would ideally like to sort of put some things in front of both the industry and the commissioners and have people make those choices with sort of clear recognition of what the likely consequences will be. And to that extent, it did work. The decisions that were made in recognition of what the likely consequences, at least as best we can estimate them, might be. It wasn't necessarily the same everywhere, as I was saying earlier, Joe.
One of the things the commission has talked about a number of years is the issue of bycatch.
Yes.
Where are the areas that are the biggest concerns for the commission for bycatch? What's being done to address that?
Yeah, there's two components to that. The first one is how much is the bycatch, and the second one is then what's the impact of the bycatch in particular areas. So I'll deal with those sequentially. The first issue in terms of where the bycatch is, I think we have a reasonable understanding of bycatch in the Bering Sea, where we have large degree of observer coverage on the fisheries there. It's not quite the same thing in the Gulf of Alaska, and I think the concern that we have expressed for a number of years is our inability to estimate accurately exactly what the bycatch is in the Gulf of Alaska. So we're moving to a different observer program this year, which will, I think, solve some of those problems by putting the control of observer deployment back in the hands of National Marine Fisheries Service, but we're still dealing with a relatively low level of coverage for the trawl fisheries in the Gulf of Alaska, and that doesn't give us a lot of confidence in thinking that we actually know exactly how much bycatch is occurring in those areas. But the second part of it is, of course, then what's the impact of the bycatch in particular areas? And that's, again, something we don't know particularly well, because that's dependent on migratory behavior of the fish. And that varies by sex, by size, by age, and probably by year. So that's not known with a high degree of certainty either. So there's a couple of unknowns in here that we're sort of making slow progress in trying to get some understanding on that.
You are learning more about migration patterns?
We're hoping to, and we've both used several different kinds of tags over the last several years. We've used pop-up satellite tags as well as the large pit tagging program we had from 2003 through 2009. What we're trying to do now is working on the development of a geomagnetic tag, which will actually give us a trace of what the fish was doing over this over the time that the tag is on it. Up until now, we've been relying on point-to-point sort of things. Here's the fish was tagged here, it was recovered there, but we don't know very much about its route of movement or necessarily what its residence time is in particular parts of its range.